Hello, everyone. Welcome to our The Week That Wasn't Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European Macro Research at Natixis. And with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello, also from my side. So today we will talk about a policy instrument that is important for combating climate change, namely the so-called Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism. It's a little clumsy name, but the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism is an important tax system that the European Union has installed in 2023. It's still in a transitional phase, but it will come under current plans fully in effect in 2026. The goal of this import tax system is simple. It seeks to prevent that carbon-intensive industries relocate to locations outside the EU with the goal to avoid being taxed for carbon emissions inside the EU. In other words, the border adjustment mechanism seeks to prevent so-called carbon leakage, the effect that taxation moves production abroad. And in today's podcast, we discuss about what the EU currently does, how this represents progress relative to prior arrangements, but also some problematic aspects of the current EU approach to taxing carbon at its borders. And to discuss these important topics, we're very pleased to have Harald Fadinger with us today. Harald Fadinger is professor of economics at the University of Mannheim. He's my colleague and is working on international trade. He has also recent research work on carbon border taxes, which proposes also an alternative taxation approach for preventing carbon leakage. So it's great to have you with us, Harald. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Klaus. Hi, Dirk. It's great to be here with you.
So before we talk about carbon border adjustment in a moment, we need to briefly talk about carbon pricing in the European Union. So domestic carbon pricing is the key reason why the EU wants a carbon adjustment at its outside borders. So what's the state of affairs with respect to domestic carbon pricing? Which sectors are included and how have carbon prices evolved over time?
Well, the EU carbon pricing system is what we call, as economists, a cap and trade system, which means that basically the EU sets each year the amount of emissions that firms are allowed to emit. And then firms have to buy emission rights in order to be emit at the market price. And these emission rights can also be traded between firms in a market. So these certificates cover emissions that are relevant for greenhouse gases like CO2, nitrous oxide, and perfluorocarbons. The sectors covered are electricity and heat generation, so power plants, that's the key sector, but it also covers emissions that are directly generated in energy intensive industries like oil refineries, steel works, production of iron, aluminium, cement, glass, ceramics, pulp, paper, and others. It also covers aviation, so intra-EU flights and maritime transport. And the goal of the EU ETS is to reduce EU emissions of greenhouse gases by 62% by 2030 compared to 2005 levels. And for a very long time, the price of these emission certificates, which we also call ETS, emission trading system price, per ton of CO2 was very low. So in 2017, a ton of emissions of CO2 cost only 4 euros. So that was pretty much negligible. In 2020, however, the price had already risen to 20 euros. And in 2023, prices went up to as much as 105 euros per ton. Currently, prices are a little bit lower because demand for emissions due to the bad economic situation in the EU, the recession, has fallen. But for the future, we expect emission trading system prices of 100 or 150 euros per ton. So an amount that is no longer negligible for many industries that are relatively emission intensive.
Right, so that's what has happened inside the European Union, and these strongly rising domestic carbon taxes have obviously triggered a reaction by the EU for adjustments at its borders. And this is the so-called carbon border adjustment mechanism, which is a system for taxing energy-intensive imports that come into the EU but are produced outside. Can you provide us with some of the key aspects of this tax systems, and in particular also maybe how taxes get determined within this system?
Yes, so the problem with the EU emission trading system is that other countries do not have an equivalent carbon price. And that, of course, puts EU producers at a disadvantage compared to producers from third countries that don't have to pay that price, right? So this is where this concept of carbon leakage kind of becomes important. So when the EU carbon price increases, then by putting or making EU producers less competitive due to that additional cost for each unit of carbon that they have to that they emit, EU imports will increase, because some European production is displaced basically by imports, which become relatively cheaper. But also some of the EU exports are displaced by exports from third country exporters, because EU exporters become less competitive compared to exporters from third countries. And to the extent that production in other countries is more carbon intensive than EU production, this also leads to a displacement of emissions abroad, right? So EU producers emit less because they emit less per ton produced due to the carbon tax, but they also produce less. But these emissions to some extent pop up in the rest of the world as emissions of firms maybe that are located in China that produce much more carbon intensively for each unit that they produce. And that is the true problem. Why and the EU ETS needs to be complemented by a carbon border adjustment mechanism that prevents this type of leakage. And the way the EU has decided to design the carbon border adjustment mechanism is the following. One actually has to calculate for each producer, for each producing plant located abroad, so let's say an Indian steel plant, the amount of CO2 emissions that are embodied in the exports to the EU. And this means direct or process-related emissions that are created at the plant level when producing that steel, but also emissions that are embodied in the energy that the plant is using. So this, of course, requires sending basically an inspection team to each plant located abroad. In the case that the plant can't provide its CO2 emissions, there's going to be a fallback, let's say the average emission intensity of Indian steel production. And for the amount of carbon contained in the imports to the EU, the importers has then to buy the amount of CBAM certificates at the EU carbon price corresponding to the amount of carbon embedded in the imports. But this obviously, as I've explained, is a very complicated process because in principle you need to inspect every plant worldwide to determine its specific production process. And that's why CBAM will at least initially be applied only to a very few products that are quite carbon intensive, namely aluminium, steel, fertilizers, hydrogen, and energy. And all the other sectors will not be covered by carbon border adjustment. And that, of course, has important drawbacks as well.
Would you nevertheless say, despite this sounding quite complicated, that the carbon border adjustment mechanism is a step forward relative situation without it? And yeah, if so, how and to what magnitude, what order of magnitude?
I mean, economists have long argued for a carbon border adjustment mechanism. And in fact, a good carbon border adjustment mechanism could, in fact, avoid leakage. So we have done some simulations, and without carbon border adjustment, when the EU carbon price increases, let's say from 15 to 100 euros, then this actually leads to a reduction of EU exports by 10% and an increase of EU imports by also around 10%. And that means that there is going to be a lot of leakage without carbon border adjustment. So if you look at manufacturing emission reductions because of the ETS or carbon price increase in the EU, without carbon border adjustment, global emissions are going to be reduced by 0.84%. But an additional 0.6% of emissions are leaked, meaning that without leakage, global emissions with the same ETS price increase would go down by 1.4% instead of only by 0.84. So in principle, there's a lot of leakage associated to a EU carbon price increase. The problem is that the current EU CBAM proposal is hardly effective in avoiding that leakage. So global emissions with that proposal would go down by 0.87%, and that's hardly more than a 0.84% without any carbon border adjustment. So it's just not doing a lot. And the reason why it's not doing a lot is that around 95% of EU imports are not covered by the carbon border adjustment. One other thing that why carbon border adjustment in principle is good is that it provides incentives for other countries to introduce an emission trading system as well. So here I'm specifically thinking of what Nordhaus has coined a carbon club, namely a set of countries that jointly introduce an emissions trading system and carbon border adjustment relative to non-members. So other countries basically can decide whether to join the club, which has the advantage of not facing any tariff, but the disadvantage of having to introduce a high carbon price themselves, or trying to free ride and to stay out, but then they face the relatively high tariffs from the members of the carbon club. And of course, such a carbon club can only work if the penalty of not participating is sufficiently large. And of course, here, the EU itself is quite small already, but if it only if this border adjustment only covers 5% of its imports, then the incentive, of course, to join the club or the EU emission trading system because of that is not very large. So it's not going to do the job. So in principle, carbon border adjustment could be very good. It's just that with its current design, it's not very effective, neither in preventing leakage nor in providing sufficient incentives for other countries to introduce their own emission trading system.
Beyond the possibility that they join the club or are incentivized to set up their own system, they could also go the other route and decide to retaliate and introduce by themselves some tariffs and try to hurt the EU. Do you see that as a risk, that countries see themselves unfairly treated because of the CBAM and decide, well, we'll respond to that in kind?
Well, one thing that is true is that, of course, the CBAM particularly sets high taxes or tariffs on those countries that are quite dirty in their production. And these are mostly low-income countries. So these countries might feel specifically discriminated and hurt, and therefore might decide to go, for example, to challenge CBAM at the World Trade Organization, or instead of going the legal route, just to introduce some type of retaliatory tariffs themselves. However, one must say, because basically just 5% of EU imports are covered by the current CBAM proposal, it is not going to trigger a major trade war. So that is quite unlikely, I would say.
So the fact that only a few imports are covered actually in the current approach is not only problematic with respect to inducing others to join the club, but also in terms of the effects it has in terms of reducing carbon. And one thing, I suppose, what's going on is that if you shift imports away from these basic materials like steel and glass and so on to some sort of more consumer to more finished products, they would completely avoid being taxed at the time of imports. And do you see this as being a big concern with the current arrangement?
Yes, indeed. I think this is a very important concern. So the offshoring of final products that contain carbon-intensive intermediates to countries outside of the EU is a major problem. So if you think of the current proposal, if you want to produce a car inside the EU and you import the steel for doing that, you as a car producer will have to pay the CBAM on all the steel imported into the EU. But if you produce that same car outside of the EU and then import the car, which is a final product, then that car is not going to be taxed based on the carbon that is contained in the steel used for its production. So avoiding this kind of arbitrage, which happens by offshoring goods that are intensive in carbon-intensive intermediates, requires covering basically all manufacturing goods by CBAM, so that even if you import a car, you have that car will be taxed based on the CO2 that is contained in all its intermediate products contained in the car. But that, of course, is a daunting task, trying to compute the carbon that is contained in all the intermediate products that went into a very complex final product. And even manufacturers, if they want to, might not have the capacity to do that, besides the fact that they might not want to disclose the carbon content correctly.
But this alludes to another problem, and that it relies on, well, information that needs to be supplied by producers, which, as you already suggested, might provide an incentive for underreporting. And if I understand correctly, the introductory phase of the mechanism, which lasts until the end of 2026, is designed to collect the data that is needed for the European Union to be able to compute carbon content. But this procedure sounds like a bureaucratic monster with obvious incentive problems as it relies on self-reporting by companies. What do you think about this? What's your view on that?
I mean, I completely agree with your view here. So in principle, there are no incentives for dirty foreign producers that are more dirty than the average producer in their country to declare their carbon content correctly. Producers will always have an incentive to misdeclare, to declare that, in fact, their product has been produced in a very clean fashion, so they don't have to pay a lot of carbon tax when they import to the EU. And in order to prevent that, one, of course, has to send an inspection team to each production plant abroad in order to figure out how much CO2 is really going into the product there. Now, this might be manageable as long as CBAM is applied only to very few products, because there are not that many steel plants or aluminium plants or fertilizer plants worldwide. It's a few hundred maybe. But if you want to extend CBAM to more products, it's going to lead to a crazy bureaucracy, or it's going to be completely unmanageable. Also, we know very well that corruption is a problem in many countries. And so even if you send a team, or you basically have a certification agency that sends basically its own inspectors, it might be that they're just bribed and might not report correctly. And even emerging markets themselves might sometimes have problems to implement a policy that they want to implement themselves. So, for example, China had a policy in place where there was an energy use limit on the largest firms, because China wasn't able to produce sufficient amounts of energy. So there were energy caps for the 1,000 largest manufacturing firms operating in China. But Chinese authorities basically didn't actually know which plants were belonging together economically. So who were basically the common owners behind different plants that might by name belong to different firms, but economically were one entity. And there's evidence in a paper by Daniel Xu that Chinese firms actually managed to avoid that regulation by just shifting across their production, across their plants that were legally belonging to different companies, but in the end had the same ultimate owner. So even when Chinese authorities want to implement a policy in their own country, they have a very hard time doing so because of informational problems. So if you think of the EU wanting to impose an extraterritorial policy in China or another emerging market or developing country, where local authorities have no incentives to help, I'm not sure this is going to go very successfully.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great, certainly. So another thing that seems to be problematic is that the border adjustment mechanism of the EU is only taxing imports with the goal of leveling sort of the playing field for goods that are sold inside the EU. But this approach does not speak at all to leveling the playing field for EU firms that sell abroad. In particular, firms that produce in the EU will have to pay carbon taxes inside the EU, even if they export their goods later on, and then face competition from firms that perhaps pay no or lower carbon taxes. So from a purely profit-maximizing perspective, it seems to be the case that it is better to locate production outside the EU, because then you can sell outside the EU without having being taxed for emitting carbon, and you can still import in the EU paying the carbon adjustment tax. But that's strictly dominating to a situation where you would produce and serve the world market from inside the EU. Is that a correct assessment? Would you think that's a problem?
Absolutely, Klaus. You're completely right. So we have done this kind of simulation. What happens if the EU carbon price increases to 105 euros? And our model implies that this would reduce EU exports by around 10%, because they are replaced by exports from third countries. And in principle, it's well known that ideally one should have export subsidies to compensate basically EU producers for the EU carbon price on their exports. The problem here are the rules of the World Trade Organization. And the World Trade Organization has an agreement on export subsidies, that absolutely forbids any type of export subsidies. Now, one could actually have avoided this problem if the EU carbon price had been implemented as a tax rather than as a regulation. So the cap and trade system that the EU has put in place is considered by the World Trade Organization as a regulation, whereas a carbon tax would have been a tax. And a tax can actually be rebated at the border. So if you think of value-added taxes, exporters are actually rebated the value-added tax on their exporters, on their exports. But it's not allowed on the WTO to rebate the EU ETS certificates bought for the exports. So that puts the two things into an asymmetry, even though we know that economically a quota and a tax basically will be equivalent, but not for the World Trade Organization. And yes, indeed, ideally we should have subsidies to compensate EU exporters for their cost disadvantage in export markets due to the EU carbon price.
But how is compliance with these rules anyway, if I may ask? I mean, it seems to me that many countries, I'm not an expert here, but are not really compliant with not subsidizing their export sectors at all.
I mean, the EU has put a lot of effort to make their CBAM WTO compatible. And it's debatable if it will be. It might be challenged, but they have done everything possible to make it in line with WTO rules. Of course, the EU could also have said, well, we don't care about international law. Let's just subsidize exports. But this was a political decision to not go down that route.
Okay. So with all these problems at hand, you and your co-authors have thought about how to improve the situation. And in a recent working paper titled Designing Effective Carbon Border Adjustment with Minimal Information Requirements, Theory and Empirics, you propose an alternative adjustment regime, which you called leakage border adjustment mechanisms. We'll reference that paper in the description of the podcast. But can you tell us what the main elements of this proposal are and why it, and how it overcomes the problem of the existing regime?
Yes. So the main problem of CBAM as it's currently designed is that it has these huge information requirements, which make it infeasible to be extended to all sectors. And so we have thought whether we can come up with a border adjustment mechanism that requires less information and therefore can be applied to all manufacturing sectors. And the idea we had was to give up on the incentive for foreign producers to produce in a cleaner way, which CBAM does have, because it really gives you a higher tax if you're producing in a dirtier way, but instead to focus on the primary goal of eliminating leakage associated to any increase in the EU carbon price. And in fact, eliminating leakage requires less information. The only thing we need to know to prevent displacement of EU production by dirty imports is a tariff that makes up for the cost disadvantage of European producers relative to foreign producers. And in order to do so, we just need to know how much carbon is contained in each unit of output in the European industry. So we have to estimate the EU production function in that sector, so to say. And we need to know that when relative prices of EU producers versus foreign producers change, how consumers will substitute from EU products to foreign products. And that, this is a trade elasticity, so to say, that we know relatively well how to compute as trade economists. So for the average product, let's say trade elasticity is around 6. So when I increase EU prices by 1% relative to foreign prices, consumers will consume around 6% more of foreign products relative to EU products. So trade is actually quite price sensitive. And as a consequence, we only know two pieces of information, namely how carbon intensive the EU production process is. And this is something that we know because this information is anyway required from EU producers for the European emission trading system, because each EU producer covered by the ETS has to pay according to the carbon embodied in its production. So that's public knowledge. And the other thing we need to know is these trade elasticities. And then we can design a tariff that just keeps trade constant or imports constant at the level they were before the EU ETS price or carbon price increased. The only thing one needs to have is a bit of faith in an economic model, because we need to kind of be able to compute how consumers switch basically between EU producers and foreign producers when EU carbon prices change. And we need to know something about the EU production process. But we don't need any information on the carbon content of foreign production, which is the difficult piece of information to obtain. Ideally, one would, of course, also subsidize export based also on the EU carbon intensity. So we would just need to know how much EU prices go up due to the EU carbon price increase and compensate EU producers for that. And by eliminating that leakage, we can go from 0.08 global emission reductions to 1.4% global emission reductions. So we can almost double the efficiency of the EU emission trading system.
That sounds like a lot. As far as we know, you have already presented this alternative proposal by you and your co-authors at the European Commission. So what was the reaction there?
Well, it's true that a few weeks ago I presented our project at the EU Commission, and I even had a discussant who was the director in charge of implementing the carbon border adjustment mechanism at the EU level, and she wasn't that happy about our analysis, because even though she admitted that what the EU had come up with is maybe not ideal, it has caused a lot of political negotiation, and in the end the ultimate outcome is a kind of a compromise between different political views, and also the fact that this mechanism has to be compatible with the World Trade Organization. So she basically said, well, if you had made this proposal like 3 years ago, there would have been a chance to take it into account. But for the moment, it's kind of late. Maybe with the next policy review that we're going to have, we might consider it. But for the moment, we will probably stick to what we have.
But there's still a lot of goods to be included in the adjustment mechanism. So maybe there's some chance of
getting
a different approach.
At the point where the EU, I mean, in principle, it wants to cover more and more goods. But obviously, the current proposal becomes infeasible at the moment where you want to expand this to more goods. And you really have to go to goods that are final products and that contain carbon intensive intermediates. And at that point, I think maybe the EU will reconsider and go for something easier that can be expanded to more sectors. At least this is what we hope.
I hope that too, yeah. After that podcast or after listening to you, that would seem a good idea. So Let me try a short summary as usual here, and it's really going to be a short because there was lots to reproduce. What are the key elements of the carbon border adjustment? So the key element is you have to calculate what producers abroad emit. So what's the carbon content? This might not be obviously possible, and you could then rely on average estimates for the sector in a different country. And then the foreign exporters would need to buy emissions in Europe for bringing their goods to Europe. So far, only a few sectors are covered. Is that an improvement relative to a situation without a carbon border adjustment? You said, well, simulations show there will be a lot of leakage in theory in these simulations, given the incentives involved. The hope is that other countries see a need or a willingness to join the carbon club, so to speak, to introduce by themselves systems. That would obviously be the kind of best case, but there's also a risk that they might retaliate, though you said it's only a very few sectors that are covered so far, and you don't think at this stage at least that is going to happen, i.e. a trade war seems a very low probability. Then the information that is needed is obviously quite difficult to get, and you alluded again to the incentive problems here. And the example of China you mentioned, I found quite telling that even China or Chinese government wasn't able in China to enforce those kind of regulations, and tells you a lot about the likelihood that Europe could do that. So quite difficult. Will European exporters be disadvantaged? Quite a bit, you said. You again did simulations, and shifting the carbon price to 105 would imply all else equal 10% drop in exports. Export subsidies would be the normal response from an economic point of view or theory point of view, but not possible under the WTO rules, and Europe, at least for the time being, choose to really adhere to these rules. And that's where then your proposal comes in. You try to turn it around, kind of reverse engineer. So you say that getting those numbers, this information from the foreign producers is very difficult. So we should rather see how much do European producers emit, then calculate how much the carbon price would shift up their price. Then we know how much the foreign demand, they would suffer in terms of import competition, and that price difference we would need to ask in terms of tariffs to have a level playing field again for European producers. It would be quite efficient, is again what your simulation showed. Was that a fair summary of a quite difficult subject?
Yes, I would say that was a very good summary. I think you got all the points right, and you mentioned all the important points.
Very good. I'm glad to hear that. And I'm sure that we'll hear about this topic again going forward. And we, if we can, would like to invite you then again to see how things have developed when viewed from your point of view.